Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey guys, welcome to a new Winter Cults and Culture. This is the second part of our Dark Souls bosses run-through, where I've ranked every single Dark Souls boss across the trilogy. So if you haven't heard already, go back and listen to part one. This is part two. And yeah, we'll be counting down all the way back to number one. Thanks.
Winter Cults and Culture.
And at number 23 is the Royal Aegis. So the Royal Aegis is in Dark Souls 2. And if I remember correctly, he's just before you go into like King Vendrick. So you're kind of feeling like this is next to the end boss. And again, it's a one-on-one battle. He feels like, I know he's, the Royal's in the name. Veldstadt, I think his name is. But there's an element of like, you know, he feels powerful. In more ways than one. He does look very regal. He's got this golden suit of armor on. And yeah, he hits really hard. I didn't have that much of a problem with him though. I think it took me about four tries really, which, you know, isn't a lot really for Dark Souls. But I was pretty powerful at this point. And yeah, but generally speaking, I found the whole match good fun. I thought it was a really fair battle again. I felt like I earned it from when I got to the end. His moveset was good. It wasn't too crazy. I think he has a spear, so you kind of got to, you know, account for that and the wide range. But yeah, it felt like, okay, this is like the guy I've got to get through, the last hurdle, as it were, for the final boss. And that doesn't, that isn't the case, which is part of, you know, Dark Souls 2 endgame. But it was a good fight. Nonetheless, so yeah, that's kind of why it's held up a bit higher in the list. So number 22 is the Guardian Dragon from Dark Souls 2. So the Guardian Dragon from Dark Souls 2 is, for me, because I hadn't done Dark Souls 1 dragon, this felt like the real first proper dragon battle for me, and I really loved it. I thought it was great. By the end of it, I felt so powerful. The fact I defeated this dragon wasn't particularly difficult. He was okay. There was a lot of kind of staying behind, obviously staying away from the fire that he breathes when he goes up, making sure you kind of, I think you run underneath him when he moves up like that to breathe fire on the floor. But yeah, the fact you take on a dragon, you kill him, was a big deal to me. And yeah, I think that was the first one that I'd done. So for me, it was a bit of a big deal. And it felt cool, and so that's why it's kind of so high up the list. And I think it looks good as well, and it's in this kind of like a makeshift wooden area, not very great for fire, I suppose. But yeah, it just feels epic. It felt like, well, I'm like, you know, this is a proper massive battle, and that's what's really good about, you know, Dark Souls stuff. So at number 21 is the Iron Golem from Dark Souls 1. This is the guy that you fight and you have to defeat at the top of Sen's Fortress before you get taken to Anor Londo. So he's kind of like the final test, really, to prove your worth to get to like the land of the gods, essentially. And yeah, it was, I really enjoyed the whole Sense Fortress thing. I enjoyed making my way up to the top, all the obstacles that it was, that, you know, it took to get there, the giants rolling stuff down into the thing. And you realize that's where they're coming from, these big balls. And then you've got like a little tower next to it where there's a giant on the top as well. All this stuff, that whole like run, that whole level, as it were, was so cool. Really enjoyed it. I really felt like, you know, you've literally gone from the bottom, and you've worked your way really hard slog to the top. And then this is the guy you meet, and he's, yeah, a worthy adversary to kind of finish this gauntlet on. And it's exactly what he kind of does on the tin. Big iron golem guy. He hits hard. You can cheese him by getting him to fall off the ledge. I didn't do that. I fought him fair and square. And yeah, he's just a big giant, basically. It took me about 6 goes, maybe 7 goes to kill him. And I was doing all this solo, as far as to say. I didn't summon anyone that wasn't an NPC anyway for Dark Souls. But that's if I could find a summon sign for an NPC anyway. And yeah, so, and it felt like, again, epic. This is the first kind of thing I'd seen with something like this, especially since like Shadow of the Colossus and stuff, where it's like that, they're not on that scale, but it kind of had that same grandeur to it. And to look up at this like massive thing, I think, oh my God, right, I have to like take this thing on and to kill him, basically. And then that whole sequence, if you get lifted up by these gargoyles and you get taken to Anolondo, just that whole bit, I was just like, whoa, like, where am I? What the hell just happened? That was cool. So yeah, that's why it's so high up the list and well-deserved. And number 21, the Iron Golem. Iron Golem, even. So at number 20 is Seath the Scaleless from Dark Souls. One of the big players in Dark Souls lore. He's the dragon that kind of helped Gwyn and turned on his own dragons. And he helped Gwyn kill them. He is without scales, so he's mortal as opposed to the immortal dragons. He's very pale. He's an albino skeleton, essentially. And he has been doing these experiments whereby he's trying to find the key to immortality. And through crystals, he's been able to do this. And you find him at this massive library, basically. I forget what it's called now. That's going to really annoy me. At the top, next to Anolondo. The whole thing's just great. The whole thing looks cool. And it's one of those things where I was like, the first time I fought him, it was just crystals everywhere. And then I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I basically died almost immediately. And I was like, so cross. And then you wake up and you're in a jail. You're like, yeah? Because normally you wake up at your last bonfire, but this time it's like, put you in a jail. And it's like, oh, only realizing later that it's like, oh, so he's going to do experiments on me, I guess. That was pretty cool. And then you have to basically fight your way out of the jail and then take him on again. But this time you basically turn around and you see a crystal which you have to smash up first, and then that's basically where all his power comes from, and then you take him on normally from there. So I've kind of, even though like that's not just the boss fight is him and not the jail stuff, the whole thing overall, that whole story and plot was really great, and I really liked it, and I thought it was very creative and original. And then, yeah, when I went in to do the actual final fight, I smashed the crystal up and I killed him. Again, it felt well-deserved, felt good. And, yeah, the fact you've kind of taken on this dragon, I know I said, but just that was like the first dragon I played. Is the kind of, that was like a dragon. This guy, Seath, just kind of sits there. He's not really like a proper dragon. He kind of breathes these crystals or whatever at you. So he is a dragon, but really he's not like doing dragon-y kind of stuff. He just seems to look like a dragon. And yeah, but it felt big and epic. And yeah, the fact that I liked the idea that you see these guys in the beginning intro and now you're actually like fighting them. And he was one of the ones I was like, man, this is really cool. So yeah, a good fight. And yeah, there's a bit of story to it as well, which is good. So that brings me on to number 19, which is Quel'ag from Dark Souls 1. Quel'ag is one of the Daughters of Chaos. And she's the spider, half sexy woman, half disgusting spider that spews lava everywhere. And the lead up to her is great. It's brilliant. I like the whole level. I mean, you kind of, this is where you make her way down through all the sludge and the nastiness of Blighttown and, you know, all the poison at the bottom. And then, like, you see, like, her lair, which is all, like, webs, basically. And there's these giants throwing boulders at you, trying to get you away. And when you go in, there's this, like, weird pustule thing, which you don't have to kill. And then you go through and you take her on. It took me a few goes. I think this was the first... I'd kind of had trouble with all the bosses, but this was the first boss where I was like, you know, properly like, right, I have to really focus on what I'm doing now. The other ones have been a bit like, oh, you can hack and slash, but where she was doing all this lava stuff and she was kind of felt like she was everywhere a bit more. I was like, okay, right, yeah, got to focus. And especially after going through Blighttown where it's just like, ugh, such slow and like dark and horrible and nasty. I was like, I've got to get out of here. And the kind of bright lava that she spews as well was quite cool. And yeah, the fact you're in this spider lair is great. What I didn't realise until quite recently is that you're actually right underneath Firelink Shrine. And there's points where you actually look up and see it, which is mad when you think about it. It's pretty cool though, isn't it? So Quelaag's, as a character, is cool. I like the fact she's like sexy woman, but then disgusting spider. It's literally two complete opposites. The fight itself was great. I liked kind of, you know, trying to get away from more lava attacks and all this stuff. And when you finally kill her and you go to the back, you can actually find her sister and you realise that Quelaag is trying to like basically get souls and stuff to give to her sister because her sister's in so much pain. So the fact that, again, they've kind of weaved in a kind of story around it. So at the time, I'm just like, I don't really, you know, again, I played the first Dark Souls without really knowing what's happening. And I had to read all up about it on the end and put things into better context. But this is one of the times where I was like, that's like dark in a really good way. And yeah, so again, it's kind of like a story around it. And on top of being a great boss battle and with someone who looks pretty cool as well. So yeah, this was great. I thought it was a really good boss fight. And that was number 19. So number 18 is from Dark Souls 2 and it's the Looking Glass Knight. And the reason why I like this so much is because he kind of spawns in his mirror. He's got like a mirror shield thing and he spawns in people and he can also, and this happened to me once, spawn in other players to fight you. And this was done, I mentioned this earlier in Dark Souls 3 when you're up against the spear of the cathedral or whatever. But yeah, in this one, this was the first time they'd done it a little bit, touched upon it. The Looking Glass Knight himself is a cool fight, big. Again, he's at a point where you're just like, I feel like I'm nearing the end of something when really you're just at the beginning of something. But just that's cool. I like the fact he's got this big mirror thing and I felt like he was cloning me as well before like someone else came in. Maybe I made that up, I'm not sure. But yeah, he felt big and I quite liked this gimmicky maybe element to it. And yeah, and again, it felt like a good crescendo to the build-up that had come just before it. So that was the Looking Glass Knight, number 18. Number 17 is Dark Souls 3's Pontiff Sullivan. Renowned to be difficult, I found him tough, but I actually did it, I think, on my fourth go, and I didn't find him particularly that hard. No... not me boasting or anything like that. I was doing a strength build and I found that if I just kind of did a classic like dodge, like, well, basically roll, hit, back up, roll, hit, back up, because I was so powerful as well, it didn't kind of take me that long. And then when he, halfway through, he's got like two swords and he's kind of sweeping them around a lot and it's pretty constant. And then halfway through, he has like a shadow version of himself. And I was, because they're quite, literally, they're physically close to each other when they start. I kind of just concentrated on getting that shadow one guy away, like, pretty quick. And his health is a lot less. So every time he appeared, I just kind of smashed him up. And then I went straight for the Pontiff Sullivan again and continued what I was doing. So it didn't feel like it was that complicated. But I loved, again, great build up. And this is something that Gary from Bonfireside Chat says, which, you know, he's right about a lot of stuff. But one of them is that before you get to the boss, the level that you're kind of going through to reach him, the boss's fingerprints are everywhere. So you're finding out about the boss as you're playing and you don't even realize it really until you get there. And that's great. And this was very much like that. His moveset, everything around him, getting there in the first place. It was just, I loved it. Loved everything about it. And it was a difficult fight. But yeah, as I said, I didn't find it particularly tough. They were definitely tougher. But I can see why. I think I just got lucky with my build and my play style. Whereupon I was able to kind of take advantage of that. And he looks cool. It's a cool story behind him as well. Pontiff Sullivan. Number 16 is Lorianne and Lothric from Dark Souls 3. Now, I'm still tempted to put this higher, and I might get lambasted for not putting it higher, especially with some of the ones which people might hate me for. But these are the two brothers, one of which is like a massive kind of a bigger humanoid, I suppose, or in his armor. But it's like his legs are broken, so he's just kind of trying to crawl around and smash you up with his sword. And he is very powerful. And his brother is kind of hanging back for the first half of the fight. And he's all like magic and stuff. And he's trying to help his brother out when they defeat you. This took me a few goes to do. It's funny enough, it's one of those things where like I fought. The first time I did it, I actually did better. I got really close to doing it. And then another like 12 to 15 goes later, I defeated it. But those 12 or 15 goes, I didn't do as good as I did that first time. It's one of those weird things. Yeah, I think I overthought it probably a bit too much. But yeah, you kind of, he teleports about a bit, the big brother, as it were, teleports about a bit. Maybe he's a little brother, I can't remember. Physically big. And his sword is pretty, hits you hard. He's got some good combos. But you can kind of get behind him and, you know, smash him up a bit. And when he gets to about halfway, then the brother climbs on his back. Now the problem is if you kill the big brother, then the little brother basically brings him back to life and you have to do it again. So the idea is you kind of want to concentrate on the little brother. You kind of want to concentrate on both, but the little brother's where it's at. You want to smash him about. It kind of takes you a while because they kind of follow up each other's attacks. And it can get a bit complicated and overwhelming at some points. But so, yeah, there's a lot of like, you got to keep moving and all this. But it was good fun. And it just, the story of it was cool. They talked a bit. The fact that it's like, you know, this little bit halfway through where he brings him back to life was nice. And just the way it ends was cool as well. And yeah, if you look about into the plot about how they basically deserted their duty and and all this, and you know, they killed a demon prince or something, and you know, the one was supposed to be the brother, that the other person to kind of ignite the flame, and they both shirked their duties and just stayed mates basically. Then great, and all that stuff is really cool. But yeah, this is like the big fight, the last kind of Lord of Cinder before you take on the boss. So yeah, it's tough, but it's definitely fair. And again, the big run up feels really epic. You've done loads to get here now. Like, this is at Lothric Castle. Like, the big hub. There's this massive staircase to even get there. Whole thing feels epic, and it's a really good fight to end on. So, yeah, I'm still quibbling over whether I should have put it higher, really, but I haven't. So, number 16 is Lorianne and Lothric, which now brings me up to number 15. We're getting there, guys. This is Dark Souls 2's Burnt Ivory King, and this was part of the DLC for Dark Souls 2. The Ivory King, and this is he's kind of like the big boss of this. I believe this was the last in terms of the release. This was the last DLC released, but it wasn't the last one I did. The last one I did was the underwater one or whatever, the underground one, not the fire one and not this one, basically wind maybe. Yeah, Burnt Ivory King, you have to basically go around and collect these knights from the level. And I didn't realise this for ages. So I kind of took on this boss very quickly. And what happens is when you kind of fall down, you get one knight, I think, automatically anyway or something. And then I was summoning someone to help me. And we were just taking on these people. And this guy was like, dude, you got to get the other knights. Like, we can't take these guys on by ourselves. I was like, what are you talking about? Then I realized I had to go backtrack, basically explore the level thoroughly to get it. And I just thought that I'd reached the end because I'm thick. That's surprisingly short. But no, it's a whole other thing to it. So then you go back and you find, I think it's like three or four knights who are just kind of sitting on this chair. You just press a button and they like get up and disappear. And then they come, they meet you at the final battle. Then you go back and yeah, and then you all kind of fall through this pit into the abyss, I guess. And then basically there's these like swaths of enemies turn up. You take them on, and then it's like fucking, I think it's like a big door basically comes up. It opens out, and like bloody Sauron or something, you see this little figure of someone coming through, like this kind of silhouette, and it's the Burnt Ivory King, and then you've got to take him on. So I did these with the knights, and I think I might have summoned an NPC and summoned a human as well. So it really felt like we were like gangbusters or something. We were really kind of going in there, you know, trying to kill everyone and everything. It felt like a real like war, basically. And that was just really cool. And I hadn't had that before because a lot of these are like, you know, you're one-on-one or whatever. But this felt like it was a real like group effort. And yeah, it just felt epic. Like you can see his battles kind of going on around you and you're trying to do your thing, helping out other people. Then yeah, when he turns up in the middle of it all, you're like, man, here we go. We're going to smash him up. And he's powerful as well. But I think I did it on my second try with all the summons. And yeah, brilliant. Really good fight. Really decent. And it felt cool as well. So I can see why this is a good like send off for like the whole of Dark Souls 2, essentially. So yeah, that's number 15. Number 14 is Gwyn, the end boss of Dark Souls. So not necessarily a difficult boss. I think I did my fourth go, but the run up to him was cool. You've obviously heard about him throughout the entire game. He's in this place you've not been to before, the kiln of the First Flame, essentially. And when when the music comes up, you get there and you expect this big like blah 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 blah. It's not that. It's just a little plinky plonky piano, and you basically have this massive epic fight with this guy and this very sad music. It's very strange. And there's a whole like melancholic air to it where it's like, am I doing the right thing? Like, what's kind of happening? Yeah, very weird. But it was a great ending to the whole thing. I thought, like, you've got this sad old man who was once a god. You've gone through his world, his land, his history, his, you know, his children, his friends, and now here's the man himself, and he's just this like shadow, literally, of a former self. But yeah, it's still a good fight, decent. He hits hard. You can do a lot of one-on-one stuff. I think a lot of people parry him a lot. You can do that. I just kind of went and shield up and guns blazing a little bit. And yeah, just the whole thing around it was like, this was cool. So when it ended, it was a really cool end to Dark Souls, I thought. Not the toughest boss for an end boss as well, especially, but definitely one that I felt was reflective of the game entire. So yeah, well done. So next up, at number 13 is Sif from Dark Souls. And I was one of those people who thought it was a bit wacky having like a big wolf with a sword in its mouth. Like, what the hell is going? This is so Japanese. But I found him fairly difficult to begin with. I think I might have gone away and come back a bit stronger. Because I believe he was kind of whipping my ass a lot at the beginning. I don't think I was strong enough. And yeah, he's very fast. He's got quite a wide range of attack. But yeah, as it kind of goes on, he starts, instead of getting more powerful, he gets easier. So he starts like limping a bit and all this. Then it's kind of just like one point at the end where you're just like, I'm just like killing this dog or wolf or whatever. But it's like, yeah, this doesn't feel like, I don't know what glory I'm supposed to get out of this. The arena was cool. And then, yeah, the whole thing with Artorias and then, you know, later on all the kind of story stuff that comes out of it was all great. And it kind of put it into more of a emotional context for me. But the fight itself was great. Just having this big wolf with a sword in its mouth, that by itself was just made like a really, really good fight. And it was tough. But it didn't feel like stupidly tough. So yeah, that was number 13, Sif. Number 12 is Sir Alon from Dark Souls 2. And this has to be up there with one of the bosses it took the most times for me to defeat, probably the most time spent on. Reason why is it's kind of got a bit of a gauntlet to get to him in the first place. And you've got to take on a lot of little enemies. To kind of put this into context for you, with Dark Souls 2, you have to kill like an enemy I can't remember, it's like 8 or 9 times, maybe more. And then if you do that, they disappear. That whole run, there wasn't an enemy left. I would just, that's how many times it took me and how long it took. So yeah, by the end of it, I was just running straight to Cerro Long because there was no enemies left because I killed them all so many times. Because I kept trying to get, you know, that little bit, I kept trying again and again and getting that little bit close, whatever. Well, I was getting to him, but as in not always or ever, or like I'd kill the first few a lot. So, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I had this knock-on effect. And yeah, he is kind of like a samurai a little bit, medieval samurai, and very tough, stupidly tough. I think I might have summoned one other person to help me through this, but I think they died pretty quickly, if I remember, and it was just left to me, so made it a bit useless. And yeah, he's very fast. He doesn't really kind of give you time to heal properly, so it was quite difficult in that respect. But yeah, when I killed him, man, that was such a sigh of relief. Very, very difficult, and I probably should have been at a high level before taking him on, but I really enjoyed it. And if it wasn't so much for that run, I probably would have enjoyed it more, just because the battle itself was cool. But unfortunately, yeah, that run was there, and it made my life a bit more difficult. So I would put it higher up the list, because and it's not a difficulty ranking, this is how much I enjoyed it. But the reason why it felt like it took so long was just that run up. Fight itself was good, the run up was not good. But the fight itself was good enough that it's kind of made the list. But otherwise, I might have put it in my top 5. But it's not, sorry. So number 11 is Gael. I always think from Coronation Street, which is a British show. Slave Knight Gael from Dark Souls 3. And he kind of turns up in the DLCs, basically. He has a little one in the Painted World thing. And then, yeah, he's in the Ring City one. He's like the final boss of that. So essentially, like chronologically or whatever, he's the final boss of Dark Souls 3. And again, it was one of those things where it took me a few times, not too many times. I'd say it probably took me about 7 or 8 times. Because yeah, I felt I must have, it kind of suited my play style more, I think. And again, that strength build, and I got him down to about a quarter on my first try, which isn't bad for like a first go. And then, yeah, it was just, I always kind of, he kind of mucks around for a little bit and then he gets a bit more angry about halfway through, much more aggressive. So that first stage I was always okay at, and you know, and then when he reached that second stage, that was when it was like, okay, got to really concentrate. But I found kind of like rolling around behind him, just classic Dark Souls stuff, and knowing when to back off and when to run, helped a lot. He can catch up quite a fair bit of distance with you quite quickly, so you just got to get your timing down right. Good character. I loved the setting and the fact of all everything you had to do to get there. The story behind him was cool. I liked it. And I generally like the battle itself. I thought it was really well put together. I liked the changes. I liked his moveset. It felt very much something I could deal with, but I knew would be difficult. And that it kind of towed that line that makes it great. Wasn't too easy or too hard. At the same time, it didn't feel unfair or anything like that. It felt doable, even though, you know, I wasn't particularly close. But I was like, yeah, I reckon I can do this, like, if I really try. And that makes a good boss fight for me. So that's why it's at number 11. Number 10 is the Fume Knight. Probably definitely one of the toughest Dark Souls bosses. And again, this took me a few tries. I believe I summoned 2 people to help me at the final one. And yeah, he doesn't like it when you heal, which is a bit annoying. And I think I was using a lot of gems throughout this fight. And yeah, he's like, he's hits hard and constant as well. So I felt like I needed someone to help me out just to kind of distract him for a bit. But yeah, I mean, he hits so hard, like the people I was fighting with, they get demolished pretty quickly. So yeah, I think like the last bit was just me and that was tough. But yeah, when I did it, I was like, man, that was great. But he is hard. He hits hard and fast, and yeah, all the crazy. I think he's got like dark and fire swords or whatever. It's just constant, but a great fight. Very, very powerful, very cool. Number nine is Dark Souls. It's Dark Souls 1, Four Kings. First time I did this, I fell straight through because I didn't do Sif or whatever and get the ring. So I had to kind of look in a guide. It was like, you need the ring. So, fuck's sake. So went all the way back, took on Sif, got the ring, and then, yeah, took these guys on. And I was too overpowered, really, when I think back to it. So it only took me a couple of tries. But I liked the fact that it's like it's in the abyss, so it's pitch black. They come out of nowhere. They look fucking cool. They look great. And basically, if you don't kill them fast enough when they turn up, another one appears, and there's four of them. So you've kind of got to be careful you don't get too surrounded. And luckily, it was one of those things where, like, I would kill one just as the other was about to reach me. And it felt like it felt great, but like really hectic, even though it wasn't particularly that hectic. The gothic, scary nature of it all was just cool. And yeah, generally speaking, it was just an amazing, cool, dark, horrible fight. Again, it was one of those things where the new Londo ruins, you've drained all the water, you're kind of, the city itself is kind of leading you to these guys, there's loads of abyss type stuff going on, and the fact you just basically fall through into nothing, you know, and you're standing on nothing as well, you're in like the abyss, man, that's just cool, that was just really, really cool. So yeah, hence that makes number nine, Four Kings.
So carrying on with the abyss brings me to number eight, which is Manus, the father of the abyss from Dark Souls 1. Again, this is from the DLC, the Artorias DLC, and he's like the end boss, basically. So you go through Ulysil, I think it's called, and everyone's been tainted by the abyss. And this is like back in time, before the actual proceedings of the first Dark Souls. You've gone back in time to do this. And he is at the heart of it all. So again, you kind of work your way down into the darkness, and it obviously gets darker and darker, and you see these, like, they're like humanity souls or whatever kind of floating around. And when you get there, you take on Manus, who is this kind of big ugly creature. Yeah, it comes out of the dark, and it's a fairly tough fight. I think I did it on my third or fourth go, but I was extremely powerful as well by this point. And yeah, genuinely a good fight, and had a good moveset. But just, again, having it build up to this point, because not only is it through that DLC you're hearing about it, but throughout the entire game you're hearing about the Abyss. And it's often thought that Manus is actually the furtive pygmy who picked up one of the power souls, or whatever they call them, it's not like Power Rangers. One of the souls right at the beginning alongside Gwyn and stuff, who just kind of gets forgotten about, the oft forgotten furtive pygmy, and this actually became Manus. So everything is kind of building up to this fight, and obviously it's kind of the last boss that you'll fight in Dark Souls as well, because of the fact that it was the DLC that was released afterwards. And yeah, it's just, it felt dark, it felt epic, it felt horrible. And yeah, it was like a, you know, to get to that point, you had to kind of, you know, go through quite a lot. So it was a great fight. Great fight. It looked great. It felt dark. It felt evil. And yeah, so that's why it's a number eight. Which brings me on to number seven. In the same kind of vein is Gravelord Nito from Dark Souls 1. Now people might be a bit like, what? He's not that great. As a fight, I thought he was good. Like, he's got his, like, big scythe thing. But the fact that he's made up of, like, tons of skeletons, you're in this horribly dark room full of, like, dead skeletons or whatever, he looks so cool. And, again, it's one of those things where I think I beat him on my second or third try, so it actually didn't take me that long. He's not a particularly tough fight, but the lore around him was cool. He just looked horrible, and it was great. and the fact that you'd gone through, again, this pitch black level of Dark Souls, basically. Like, people talk about Blighttown and how dark and dirty it is, but like Tomb of the Giants and all that, my God, it is so dark, like visually dark, and it's scary. It's really, like, can be really scary to play through. And this is kind of the culmination of that. You've worked your way here to Nito, and he's literally made up of death. That's what he is. So yeah, for me, that was an epic fight. I loved it. It really made a lasting impression on my brain. And yeah, so that's why it's got so high. So now we're down to number six. Number six is Sister Freed from Dark Souls 3. Now, she was part of the Ashes of Ariandale DLC, the first DLC that's released from Dark Souls 3. And, wow, I mean, this fight was tough. So this was probably, I would say, maybe the third boss that took me, maybe the third or fourth boss that took me the longest. For the simple fact that you kind of meet her about halfway through, and then you have to kind of go around and open this tomb, and then you go back to where she's sitting in this church, and then you go back down, and the father, which is this, like, you know, huge, humongous beast with like a skull for a face, but like with long hair, and he's looking into this bowl of fire. Just him by himself is amazing, and he becomes part of the boss fight. So he comes down, and Sister Freed comes down. It's like, don't worry about it. I'll fight this guy, as in you. And then, yeah, that first phase, she's kind of like a bit like Priscilla, which is kind of because the whole DLC is a little bit similar to the Painted World from the first Dark Souls. And this is another Painted World that you find yourself in this DLC. And she's got this like scythe like Priscilla. She disappears. She goes invisible. And then, so you have to kind of get from that. But she's got basically three health bars. So once you defeat her in this first stage, the second stage, basically the father guy, this big, huge, hulking monster who's chained down, breaks his chains and comes at you with this like fiery bowl. And then this is where it's like, okay, there's a lot happening here. So you've got Sister Freed doing her stuff that she does, which is quite difficult in itself. He, meanwhile, is like running across the arena, and he's spouting fire everywhere and he's jumping around. So I believe they have a shared health bar. So you kind of, doesn't really matter which you go for. You can go for both or whatever, but you always have to have your eye on the other person. There is a lot happening during that second phase. And then you think, once you've done that, you think, oh, I've done it. That seems reasonable. You've just got started in the third phase. It's basically, the father's like, Sister Freed is dead. Oh no, what am I going to do? And kind of like revives her, really. Like, you hear his words and he seems to revive her. And now she's kind of been tainted by the abyss, whatever. She's dark. She has all this dark magic now. And this is when like her attacks are so powerful and her combos, like you basically can't make a mistake, or you can make one or whatever, because it is a constant attack. And she'll rush towards you and she can one hit you and you're out after you've just spent all that time to even get into that point. Very frustrating, very, very difficult. And I was at a point where I thought, well, I was kind of not cocky, but like, I'm not really having too much of a problem with stuff. Especially since I'd just come off the back of I defeated Nameless King after this. So I actually tried defeating Nameless King, had to put that down. And then I went and did Sister Freed, and then I came back and did Nameless King. So I'd saved both those boss fights basically to do back to back, which is ridiculous. But yeah, Sister Freed. So I found out that I hadn't summoned anyone for, I don't think, any of the fights in Dark Souls 3 so far. I haven't summoned anyone. But for this, I saw a summon sign outside. And you don't need an ember. So you can just summon, I think it's Slave Knight Gael, who becomes a boss in the other DLC, which I've spoken about. But he helps you in this fight. But he only comes in on the second stage. So the first stage, you've still got the one-on-one thing. You've basically got to make sure you don't use that much Estus. So it's quite tactical. And you can maybe use one or two, but ideally you don't want to use any. And that's kind of manageable, that first phase. Second, even the invisible thing really does get me because I cannot tell for the life of me when she's going to strike. So as soon as she goes invisible, if I can't get to her in time, I'm just rolling around everywhere in the hope that she won't get me. I'd say half the time she does. Extremely annoying because it can like knock out half your energy, if not more. Anyway, second phase is when the support will come in. And yeah, and basically what I was doing was I was trying to take on one person whilst Gael was going for the other. And that's what I was doing a lot. And then he was dying and it was just leaving me by myself. So what I started doing in the second phase was basically making sure that he survives by kind of having us both attack the same person. And it was usually Sister Freed. So basically what I would do is attack Sister Freed to kind of draw her attention away from Gael. And I could kind of deal with it. And also I had my eye on when the father was coming. And if he like kind of was near me or nearby me and it felt like an easy hit, I would just turn my attention to him. And then when I was like, oh, he's turning to attack me or he's going to do whatever, then I'd run out of the way and I'd go for Sister Freed. She also heals during these moments as well, if you don't get to her in time. So whenever she was down there healing, that's basically carte blanche to kind of find her and go at her. And when I found that I could bring Gael to the third stage of the fight, I basically, because she can be like stun locked. So instead, I was playing all like tactfully and like, oh, hit, run away. Not the way to play. Go super aggressive. If both of you go at her, you'll stun lock her. Just make sure that you keep your Estus in check and jump back when you need to and just have at it, and that will happen. And basically it will take like 10 seconds really or whatever for that third phase, because she can't start doing anything. And yeah, and that just worked really well, to be honest. So really great fight. I felt like I earned it. I had to mix up my playstyle a little bit. Yes, I brought in the summon, but I think that would be really difficult to do by yourself, which I had tried to do for many a time. And even like I've wasted a lot of Ember, which is like a limited resource you get, which kind of gives you extra health and all this stuff, trying to do this, and it just wasn't working. So yeah, so it felt like once I completed that, I was like, man, cool. That was great. But again, the story kind of behind it, the visualness of it was great. It looked great. And yeah, it was very difficult. But once I'd kind of figured out to use the summon and how to use the summon, I was like, this isn't too bad. It was manageable. So yeah, again, it was one of those things that I just kind of had to figured it out, enjoyed it. So yeah, that's why number six. Number five.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quite similar, actually. Number five is Sin.
which is the it was the last boss I did for Dark Souls 2, but it was one of the DLCs for Dark Souls 2. As I said, it's the one that's kind of, I always keep on saying underwater, I don't mean that, but the one that's underground or whatever. Anyway, Sin is like a massive dragon that you take on at the end of this. So yeah, it's the last thing I did in Dark Souls 2, I believe. And you are in a fairly big arena. You can bring in some summons with you, which I ended up doing. And he flies around a lot. He's got a lot of space. He flies around a lot, breathing a lot of fire. I didn't have anyone aerial, or it wasn't magic, it was melee. So I did find a lot of the fight. I was kind of having to chase the dragon, literally, from one end to the other. And once I got close and I got behind him, I was smashing him up. And then the summons were kind of doing stuff around it. But it just felt like there was loads happening. It was great that you're in like this kind of gang to come and kill this dragon. It felt big, felt like scale big. It felt epic. And there was just one point, I think like 2/3 of the way through, I think it did take me a few goes, but like towards the one I was going to win, that specific one, it was got about 2/3 in, and I'm thinking, you know, I've got enough health, I've got groove, this is going well. Someone's doing well, they're all alive. I think it was two others. And yeah, and I was just like, this is amazing. I was like, this is so great. Just because it felt really big, it felt cool that we were doing this all together. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. And it's weird because I spend like 90% of more probably than that, 95% of Dark Souls I do by myself. I don't summon anyone for like the bits in between. I might summon someone for a boss, but Dark Souls 1 I wasn't able to summon because I was playing on a Switch and all I had was the NPCs, and I very, very rarely had used my humanity. So I wasn't, aware of it. I don't use items. I don't know why I even bother picking them up and exploring, because I'm just like a hoarder, essentially. I don't use anything. Dark Souls 2, I did a lot more summoning. That was on the PlayStation. Dark Souls 2 I did an Xbox random, so I've done one on each platform. And there just wasn't anyone to summon, basically. I didn't see any summon signs, and I wasn't really using Ember. I didn't really have much of a problem with most of the bosses. So a lot of these I've done alone, but with this one, it just felt like it was cool. All of us taking on this massive dragon again, who was tough. So yeah, that was Sin. At number four, this might be something that people will get annoyed about, because a lot of people didn't like this, but number four was the Soul of Cinder, the end boss, basically, from the main game in Dark Souls 3. And I can see why, and it kind of goes against everything I've been saying thus far in terms of building up the lore, like how Gwyn was basically, right? Where it's like you're hearing about him, you're seeing all this stuff everywhere, and then you face him. With the Soul of Cinder, there's none of that. I don't know who he is. I don't really understand what he is or who he is. But what I did like about it was the fact that he changed his play style consistently. So he would change literally weapons and how he moved. He would be like magic based or whatever, or he'd use like a great sword, or you know, something else. And yeah, so kind of fighting against him, you had to kind of adapt as you were playing it. And it was one of those things where I felt like each time I played it, I felt like, oh, I'm just learning that little bit more. I'm getting that little bit closer. And yeah, when I finally did it, it felt like everything had just come together nicely. Like I knew what he was going to do when, I knew what it meant, I knew all the different play styles he was kind of going through. I liked the arena, like the fact there's all these swords in the ground where, like, you know, that's where people have died or whatever. And just like the sparseness of the entire thing. And also like the topsy-turvy nature of how you kind of get there. Just all that I thought was really cool. And yeah, and the fact that it's like, you know, you've got this like blood moon rising or whatever in the background, it just felt really like dark and horrible, and like this graveyard of Dark Souls, and you're fighting like a culmination of everything that's come before it to do with Dark Souls. So even though there wasn't a specific identity with this guy, maybe, it felt like it was like a best of, maybe, or something like that. Bit cheesy, I know, but and taking that aside, just as a fight, I really liked it, and I liked the way it kind of played around and adapted and jumped about, and that variety really got me going. So that's why it's so high, number four, Soul of Cinder. Now, here we go. It's the top three, and it's going to be tough. It was tough to put these in the order that I thought, and I think a lot of people are going to get annoyed. A lot of Dark Souls fans are getting annoyed by how I've done this, but whatever. So number three, third best boss of Dark Souls, Artorias from Dark Souls 1, from the DLC. To a lot of people, this is probably their top boss fight, and I can see why. Basically, it's a one-on-one duel. The story behind him is cool. He looks cool. You're in the stadium. His like play style, the way he comes at you, is great. I just loved like everything about it. Really good battle. Felt the right difficulty as well. It didn't feel crazy difficult. It felt like one of those things where it's like, at first you get like pummeled, then you're like, the more you try, the more you're like, okay, you know what? This is doable. Like, I can do this. So again, building up that confidence each time you do it. Just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable. The whole story behind it about he was the one that kind of saved the Abyss from taking over, but actually he's been tainted by the Abyss, and it's you defeat him and you go and save the Abyss. So save the world basically from the Abyss. But Artorias gets the credit. All that stuff, wicked, loved it. I was thoroughly, 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 I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And so that's why it's made the third best boss of Dark Souls trilogy. So the second boss, and I know I should say this as well, I know I haven't included Demon's Souls because I've not played it. This is literally just Dark Souls 1, 2 and 3. Just thought about that as I was talking. Number 2, and yeah, a lot of people are going to disagree with this, but for me, it was Nameless King from Dark Souls 3. Now, why is that? Well, he was by far and away the toughest boss I ever faced in Dark Souls. That doesn't necessarily mean that that makes him automatically the best. The stuff I loved about it was the fact that to get to Archdragon's Peak, is that what it's called? I didn't even know about it until like I'd basically completed the game and was like, right, what did I miss? And I was like, oh, I've missed an entire area. So the fact that he's kind of boss of this little bit, afterwards finding out that he's supposed to be like Gwyn's firstborn and all this made it cool. I like the fact of like you walk in, like the whole ringing the bell, and you walk across this storm and this big gateway. He swoops down on a dragon and you got to kill him. You got to kill the dragon first or whatever. And then you take him on one-on-one. They both look cool. He looks really cool. The music, everything. It's just, it feels massive. It feels epic. But my God, it was one of those fights where I was just like banging my head against the wall. But I did, each time I was gradually getting better. So yeah, at first I thought it was just the dragon. So when I first did it, I was just like, all right, cool. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I could do this. Fairly confident. And you know, a couple of tries later, I was like, okay, yeah, I killed this dragon. Oh, right. Here we go. Oh, we're fighting him. He's got a new health bar and I'm dead immediately. And I just couldn't. I went back. I tried different builds. I tried upgrading different weapons and shields. And I was like, right, there's something I'm not quite getting here. I tried going in with hardly anything on so I could like fast roll through everything, get some more iframes, but it kind of left me susceptible. I wasn't that good at the timing. It left me susceptible to a lot of his attacks, basically. So I tried so many different things and I must have spent hours and hours and hours on it, right? I went away, came back. I went off and did other things in the game, came back. As I said, I did the whole Ashes of Ariandel thing and came back. And I did it before the Ring City, actually. But I think I did. Yeah, I did. And yeah, so just everything about him just felt epic and cool. And his play style was just so powerful. And you'd expect that really from a God of War. And in the end, you can't summon anyone for it. Well, I couldn't. I don't know if you can. I've no idea. I imagine you can summon anyone for anything, but I was not seeing any summon signs around. And then when I actually beat him,
I had to like really focus my loadout, and I basically used Havel's armor in the end and Havel's shield, or as much of Havel's armor as I could. Like my equip load wasn't crazy good, but yeah, use as much of that as possible. And I found that if I, with the shield basically can absorb a lot more than I thought it could. Essentially, I was using Yorm's great shield up to this point, mostly, and pretty good. But then, yeah, when I got Havel's great shield, which I hadn't really used, and then I just shoved some Titanite in there, upgraded it a bit, and then I think I got to like plus four or something because I didn't have any slabs left. And yeah, when I went in, when he's doing his fire stuff, like I could do the dragon now by using maybe like one or two flasks max. And then when I got to Nameless King, basically, if you can get far back enough to use an Estus when he hits you, essentially, and the thing is, like, you've got to make it a quick fight, because the longer it takes, he will just demolish you. So it's a case of, like, even if you only lost, like, I'd say a third of your health or whatever, just use an Estus. Just jump back, heal up, and then come at it again. I found just by kind of circling him a bit and trying to roll, but then was kind of working. And then in the end, basically all I was doing was I just went in, shield up, have his great shield up. And you still take a bit of damage each time, but basically I was waiting for his combos to end, and then I'd slam him with my great sword. And then kind of take a step back, see how I was doing, and come back in, like make sure my stamina was regenning as quickly as possible, which it was pretty good at anyway, because he like sucks up so much of your stamina, especially if you are using a shield. And basically just by doing that, I was like, you know, I think the first time I tried it, I'd got him down to half health and I wasn't really breaking that much of a sweat. And I was like, man, okay, this is going to work. A couple more times later, I did it, but I must have took this guy on 50 times at least, something like that. And just that feeling of when I defeated him, and I know there's that thing of like, don't, relief isn't a good sign, if you know what I mean. It shouldn't be deemed quality, basically, in terms of like, you know, just because something's difficult doesn't make it good, which is true. And I think it does apply here. I was extremely frustrated during most parts of it. But again, the game forced me to kind of look at how I was playing and change things around a bit, change my loadout, change how I was taking on the fight. And it basically got me good at like rolling as well, I have to be honest. And it worked and I did it. And it basically, it was a classic thing of like, it was hard work. The hard work paid off. But I think there's an element where a lot of it, I think, for me personally, rested on Havel's great shield, maybe more than I would want. But yeah, it just, when I did it, it felt great. It felt like, yeah, like a weight off my shoulders, and that shouldn't be the sign of a good thing. But I just loved that boss so much. And in hindsight, the more I think about it, the more I like it, and the more I'm like in love with it a little bit and enjoyed doing it, even though I probably didn't as much at the time. And again, it's kind of a bit different with the dragon from Ring City, just because that doesn't feel as fun. This felt fun, it felt cool, and it did feel doable. And you know, even when I was trying, you know, like half of it's the dragon, and then you know, once you've got that down, which, you know, you can, it seems impossible at first, but actually you can do it. And, you know, it's not, it becomes a thing where you take it on so many times, you get used to it. But yeah, and then you've just got to figure out how to deal with him, which is the real problem. And once you kind of know what's going on, then yeah. So I don't think when people go like, it's too difficult, it is very difficult. But for me, I put the time and effort into it, and I did it. And I enjoyed that moment, and I enjoyed the fight as well. And I think he's cool. I think he's just a cool boss to have. And, you know, I thought he was, if he was like the end boss for the entire game or something,
then I guess a lot more people wouldn't complete the game. But it just felt apt. It felt apt I was taking this on at the end of the main game as well, if you know what I mean. Rather than Soul of Cinder, because as much as I've said I loved Soul of Cinder, this had more of a story, and also it forced me to have to do more, and, you know, learn from my mistakes. And that's what makes a great Dark Souls boss to me. So yeah, that's why it's at number two. Which brings me to number one, the best boss fight of Dark Souls of the trilogy. No real surprise here, because people will probably be waiting for this anyway. Ornstein and Thmo from the first Dark Souls. Now, why is this? Firstly, it was when I had got to this point in Anor Londo, I was getting a bit cocky, I reckon anyway. And when I came up against these guys, I was like, man, I was like, I didn't know what had happened to me. I was like, how the fuck am I supposed to do this, basically? So I ended up, I used quite a few humanities, just going in, summoning someone. I can't remember who you summon. Is it Solaire? And trying them on. And I was just like, I could get through the first phase. And then the second phase, I was like, I cannot do this. I read a guide and it said, oh, try and kill Ornstein first. And I was like, okay. And so, yeah, I had to go away basically and grind a little bit and become more powerful, because I was just like, I'm not ready. Like, I'm not at a level where I can do this. And I went away for a bit and then I came back to it and I wasn't ready still. Went away for a bit, grinded for a little bit, just practiced more basically. Came back and did it and, yeah, completed it. Yeah, no way. It didn't take me like crazy times like it did with like Nameless King or anything. But it did take me quite a few goes and used up a lot of humanity in the process. It didn't really matter because you get loads later on. But at the time, it felt like a big deal. And the fact that it's a point in the game where it's, you know, these guys really feel like guardians. Like, right, all that stuff was a test. Let's see how you really do. Like, this is, you're in the real game now. This is the real stuff. It felt like that, like I was playing with the big boys now. And also, it made me good, basically. I was really having to focus and concentrate. Everything else had been a bit like, just get behind it, smash it, you know, or whatever, roll out of the way a few times, smash it. With this and trying to negotiate two people, I was like, right, I honestly have to really focus here on what I'm doing, what they're doing, what all their tells of their different moves, how that's going to affect what I'm going to be doing, when I should attack. And getting to that, and the fact that this was like, I think it was the first time that there was like a second phase. It was like, oh, right, well, okay, now this is going a bit crazy. But again, it still felt manageable. And I think in the end, I did it by myself as well, even though I had been summoning. I think I just did it on my Todd. I think because I ran out of humanities, to be honest. I don't think it was anything, me trying to, you know, give myself more of a challenge. I think it was just I ran out of humanities. So I was just having to give it a go myself. And yeah, and when it happened, there was part of me thinking, is this the end boss? And then you come up and it's like, oh, you see Guinevere. And she's like, here's the, which you find out, only found out after I'd completed the whole game that she was just not even real. And she's like, oh, here's the Lord Vessel. Here you go. You're worthy. And now it's like, what? Hold on. I can warp between bonfires. Ah, because I thought, oh my God, that is amazing. Which when I think about it, it's like, that's why I liked the first half of Dark Souls, maybe the best. So you couldn't do that. So it really felt like you were on this journey. But yeah, it was fun to have once you got it. I was like, man, I can just go anywhere now. This is mad. This is crazy. I don't have to like, you know, just bear in mind, like I had to backtrack, you know, from where I was in order to grind and all this stuff. Or maybe I grinded around there. I can't remember, but still. And Yeah, so, you know, it's quite a journey. And, yeah, they were just hard, tough boss battle. And it was the first real challenge, proper challenge that I'd come up against when I was playing this. And, yeah, I just thought, oh, my God. As I was playing it, I was like, this is crazy. So it felt cool during the game. It felt like this was the game. Big build up, cool after points of the story. It's not just like, okay, you defeat it, right, next bit. It's like you get something actually proper for it. It felt like it really did feel like you had passed a test, and that, yeah, you felt like you're worthy now to take on the rest of the game. And to have this like halfway through the game, it's very bold. It's a very bold step, but it's very Dark Souls. And that's the reason why this is basically the number one boss fight of the entire series, Ornstein and Smo. So there we go. That is a pretty exhaustive list of all the Dark Souls bosses that I'd done. Again, there was four that missed out, only because I hadn't actually taken them on. And again, I'll just kind of go through. So Calamite from Dark Souls 1, I never did. He was a dragon. The Ancient Dragon from Dark Souls 2, who's like your mate, basically. I didn't kill him. I didn't even bother. But yeah, he's a boss fight you can do. Gwyndolin from Dark Souls 1, I didn't even realize until afterwards and never went back. So never did that. But yeah, I imagine that he would be fairly high in people's lists, maybe. And the Dark Lurker from Dark Souls 2, I don't even know where he is. So if I did, I looked him up and I was like, I don't understand where this guy was. So maybe there was a whole chunk of Dark Souls 2 that I just didn't even get on board with. Or maybe I did it and I forgot. But those are the four that I didn't do. So counting down now, number 82 was the Royal Rat Vanguard from Dark Souls 2. Number 81, the Covetous Demon from Dark Souls 2. Number 80, the Prowling Magus from Dark Souls 2. Number 79, the Stray Demon from Dark Souls 1. Number 78, Royal Rat Authority from Dark Souls 2. Number 77, Centipede Demon from Dark Souls 1. 76, the Demon Fire Sage from Dark Souls 1. 75, the Half-Light Spear of the Church, whatever, Dark Souls 3. 74, Sanctuary Guardian from Dark Souls 1. 73, Dark Eater Medea from Dark Souls 3. 72, Grave Tender Champion and Grave Tender Wolf from Dark Souls 3. 71, Scorpioness Najka from Dark Souls 2. Number 70, Baneful Queen Mitha from Dark Souls 2. Number 69, King Vendrick from Dark Souls 2. Number 68, the Ancient Wyvern from Dark Souls 3. Number 67, Bed of Chaos from Dark Souls 1. Number 66, Pinwheel from Dark Souls 1. Number 65, Ceaseless Discharge from Dark Souls 1. 64, Old Iron King from Dark Souls 2. 63, Smelter Demon from Dark Souls 2. Number 62, the Crystal Sage from Dark Souls 3. Number 61, the Moonlight Butterfly from Dark Souls 1. Number 60, the Belfry Gargoyles from Dark Souls 2. Number 59, Demon Song from Dark Souls 2. Number 58, the Asylum Demon from Dark Souls 1. Number 57, the Flexile Sentry from Dark Souls 2. Number 56, the Taurus Demon from Dark Souls 1. Number 55, the High Lord Wolnir from Dark Souls 3. Number 54, Cursed Rotten Greatwood from Dark Souls 3. Number 53, Capra Demon from Dark Souls 1. Number 52, Deacons of the Deep from Dark Souls 3. Number 51, the Giant Lord from Dark Souls 2. Number 50, Ruined Sentinels from Dark Souls 2. Number 49, Skeleton Lords from Dark Souls 2. Number 48, Yorm the Giant from Dark Souls 3. Number 47, The Rotten from Dark Souls 2. Number 46, Ludic Skindir from Dark Souls 3. Number 45, Dragon Rider from Dark Souls 2. Number 44, Arva, King's Pet from Dark Souls 2. Number 43, Vault of the Boreal Valley, Dark Souls 3. Number 42, Dark Jukes, Dear Freya from Dark Souls 2. Number 41, Throne Defender and Watcher from Dark Souls 2. Number 40, Executioner Chariot from Dark Souls 2. Number 39, The Old Dragon Slayer from Dark Souls 2. Number 38, Dancer of the Boreal Valley from Dark Souls 3. Number 37, The Last Giant from Dark Souls 2. Number 36, Crossbreed Priscilla from Dark Souls 1. Number 35, The Lost Sinner from Dark Souls 2. Number 34, The Pain of Below and His Mate, Dark Souls 3. Number 33, Osiris, the Consumed King from Dark Souls 3. Number 32, Dragon Slayer Armor from Dark Souls 3. Number 31, The Abyss Watchers from Dark Souls 3. Number 30, The Bell Gargoyles from Dark Souls 1. Number 29, Aldrich, Devourer of the Gods from Dark Souls 3. Number 28, Alana, Squalid Queen from Dark Souls 2. Number 27, Nashandra from Dark Souls 2. Number 26, Gaping Dragon from Dark Souls 1. Number 25, The Pursuer from Dark Souls 2. Number 24, Champion Gundyr from Dark Souls 3. Number 23, Royal Aegis from Dark Souls 2. Number 22, Guardian Dragon from Dark Souls 2. Number 21, The Iron Golem from Dark Souls 1. Number 20, Seath from Dark Souls 1. Number 19, Quelaag from Dark Souls 1. Number 18, Looking Glass Knight from Dark Souls 2. Number 17, Pontiff Sullivan from Dark Souls 3. Number 16, Lorianna Lothric from Dark Souls 3. Number 15, The Burnt Ivory King from Dark Souls 2. Number 14, Gwyn, Dark Souls 1. Number 13, Sif, Dark Souls 1. Number 12, Sir Elon from Dark Souls 2. Number 11, Gale from Dark Souls 3. Number 10, The Fume Knight from Dark Souls 2. Number 9, Four Kings from Dark Souls 1. Number 8, Manus, Father of the Abyss from Dark Souls 1. Number 7, Gravelord Nito from Dark Souls 1. Number 6, Sister Freed from Dark Souls 3. Number 5, Sin from Dark Souls 2. Number 4, Soul of Cinder from Dark Souls 3. Number 3, Artorias, Dark Souls 1. Number 2, Nameless King from Dark Souls 3. And number 1, Ornstein and Smough from Dark Souls 1. So that's it. Thanks to everyone for listening to this. You can go to patreon.com/newwinter to support the show. Let me know what your list is. Let me know if I was wrong, what I was right about. You can email us, newwinterpodcast@gmail.com. Go to Instagram and Twitter, @anewwinter. And thanks very much. That's it. What a long one, but well worth it. And thank you, Dark Souls Trilogy, for being great. See you guys.
Winter culture.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.